Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Next Generation RDS PDP Working Group call on the 5th of December 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Okay. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to our chair, Chuck Gomes. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie, and welcome to everyone. Does anyone have an update to your statement of interest? Okay, not seeing any hands or hearing anyone, I'll assume not. Let's go ahead and jump into the agenda. You can see it in Adobe on the upper right there and also in the notes at the moment. So we're going to, first of all, complete deliberation on technical issue resolution as a legitimate purpose for collecting some RDS data. And first of all, we'll take a look at the poll results. Everyone has scrolling capability. So the first page two, of course, you'll see the agenda. And then on page three, a quick overview of what we've done. And we have a possible working group agreement shown in the bottom half of slide three there. That the following information is to be collected for the purpose of technical issue resolution associated with domain name resolution, technical contacts, or if no technical contact is provided, registrant contacts, name servers, domain status, expiry date and time, and sponsoring registrar. Now, in the leadership call yesterday, we spent over half our time talking about the comments that came in with the poll. So we're going to spend a little bit of time today discussing the comments. But first of all, if you'll look at slide four, you'll see the results. The results are very strong in support of rough consensus for this working group agreement. You can see three of the items that were everyone agreed. And out of 24 people, there was one person that said no on technical contacts, three that said no on registrant contacts, and then one on expiry date. See, you can see the percentages, the lowest percentage is 87.5%. If you scroll down now to the comments on page five, we'll start with those and respond to those. And certainly those that submitted the comments, feel free to jump in on the discussion. I want to first of all respond to Vicki's question, in particular, understanding why postal address is excluded. And let me clarify, and of course, Jim Galvin, I don't know if Jim's on today, doesn't look like he's on right now, is the one that proposed the wording the way he did. So let me clarify, Vicki, that postal address isn't excluded as a collected item. It's what I believe Jim intended and what we polled on was the fact that the technical contact that he is talking about there, or the contact that he's talking about there, should not be the physical address, because in the case of technical issue resolution, a physical address would be a very inefficient way to deal with technical issues. So the intent of the wording it the way it was that the postal address was excluded as the technical contact that was required for the purpose of technical resolution. It does not at all exclude postal address from being collected for other purposes. I hope that's clear, but if it's not, Vicki, please let us know. And I'm just pausing a second to see Vicki's response in the chat. Go ahead, Greg Shatton. You can speak. And
thanks,
by the
Jeff.
Way, Greg, we're going to get to your comment. So you can talk now or you can hang on a few minutes and we'll get to it.
Yeah, I'm commenting on this comment or this exchange. It's Greg Shatton for the record. I think the question, and I'll look at it as a question, is whether knowing where the person or entity is physically located is completely irrelevant to solving the technical issue. The issue is not necessarily whether you're going to send them something by mail. So it's not purely an issue of contactability. It's a question of relevance. I'm not somebody who solves technical issues for a living, and if somebody tells me that it's never, ever relevant to know where the location is, as long as you have contact information and the other information we're told is relevant, then and maybe I feel more comfortable with this, but my impression is that knowing whether you're dealing with somebody in China versus Tennessee versus the Netherlands could be relevant in a number of ways. So I think we at least need to have that as an open question. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. And I'll anyone that wants to respond, and I'll call on Maxim next, but I certainly welcome input from those who are more technical than Greg and I on this. Notice Andrew's post in the chat. The location of the contact is not the location of the servers, and that's a valid point. And on a logistical issue, David, people's voices are pitch sifted. Okay, don't know what's going on there, David. I assume that's an Adobe or telephone issue. Not sure what's there. Notice Marika's comment before I go to Maxim that for the purpose of collection, the focus has been on what's absolutely necessary for the purpose, not what is nice to have, which is probably more relevant for the access question. I think that's an important point. Lots of good chat going on. So maybe, David, my voice is sounding more bass because I'm still battling a little bit of a bug. Don't know. You're correct, Greg Shatton, that if we don't collect it, you can't access it. We're not saying that we won't collect it. Okay, we're just saying here that it's not essential to collect it for this particular purpose, but your point's well taken, so I'm open to discussion there, and I put Maxim off long enough, so let Maxim jump in.
Maxim, although for the record, I had my share of experience as an engineer, as technical director of an ISP. I worked in hosting company. And I can say that the issue is that the postal address we collect is intended to be the means of communication. So we can have postal boxes, PO boxes, which actually addresses of the postal offices and have nothing to do with servers, or most probably will not be allowed to install any kind of equipment there. home addresses and offices. In case of companies, it could be one of the offices, and it doesn't mean they do not install equipment somewhere else. We have technologies which can use multiple instances of DNS servers. For example, one installed in Australia, another in somewhere in Africa, and somewhere in Luxembourg. Yes, it's the same name of the DNS server. So if it's intended to be the method of postal way of communication, I'd say then we should leave it as is. And for technical reasons, it's usually, it doesn't help. If the method to contact either human as a physical person or an organization, and even for IP addresses, which are covered by other things like RIPE and others, usually physical location is unknown. Sometimes even to owners of the domain. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. Lots of good discussion in the chat. I won't repeat it. You can take a look at it. Greg Shatton, I do have a question for you. You still are questioning whether it is necessary sometimes. Do you? Can you give us an illustration where it might be necessary?
Oh, this is Greg Shatton for the record. I have to speak somewhat hypothetically, but you know, one thing is that physical location or address, which may not be the same thing, that may be a PO box, but that can help to more uniquely identify who you're dealing with, perhaps, although email addresses are unique, but you don't necessarily know who or where the person is that you're dealing with. It's kind of another point of information in terms of trying to ascertain facts around the problem. I think it's probably unlikely to be used as the primary method of contact on a technical issue. But addresses don't only serve as a contact. They also serve as a piece of identifying information. So I just don't know whether it's ever useful to know who you're dealing with and to identify them that way if the other information is entirely sufficient all the time. You know, so I'm really asking. I can't think of an issue where it could be completely helpful, but on the other hand, I don't have the fund of information. I can't tell you the different reasons that a gas pipeline explodes either. Not also not part of my knowledge base. So I'm kind of looking for information. Anything I would put together would be kind of speculative and props and probably not entirely correct. So I'm looking to those for whom this is an issue. And if they say I don't care, I never know, I never look at it, never has come in handy. I've solved thousands of technical problems. Resolution and otherwise, and it's never been useful to have it, to know the address of the person, to know what country they might be in. All I need is this. That's fine. I'm in this case, I'm looking to be educated. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And most of the chat seems to say that it's not necessary. Again, I want to call attention to Lisa, I haven't done it yet, but let me call attention to Lisa's post. Working Group Agreement 28 requires the registrant country to be included in the RDS for every domain name registration. So if it's a matter of geographical location in particular country, we've already got that covered. So I think that the chat, there's pretty good consensus in the chat. Somebody can correct me if you think I'm assessing it incorrectly, that the postal address is not essential for technical resolution. So rather than continue to spend time on it, there's been a lot of good chat on that. Maxim, is that a new hand?
Maxim Ozoba, for the record, yes, it's Chuck. It's new hand. I forgot to mention one important thing. Most infrastructure, I mean, if company has more than one server, usually reflected in third level domains. And here we're talking about the second level. So it's from technical perspective, from the investigation of technical failure of loss of connectivity, it's irrelevant because all the information is third and like maybe lower level of DNS. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. And let's move on then to Greg Shatton and Greg Aaron's comments 2 and 5. And let me point out that I'm pretty sure we will come back to whether or not there is a legitimate a purpose that requires the postal address be collected. So don't think that we've ended the discussion on that. So I'm pretty sure we'll get back to it when we look at other purposes. So on comments 2 and 5, our two Gregs, Greg Aaron and Greg Shatton, have differing points of view, and somewhat related to the discussion on Vicky's comment in the sense whether registrant contact is needed regardless of whether or not there's a technical contact. I'll certainly give either Greg a chance to explain their position if they would like. Just raise your hand, and I'll be glad to let you speak. So let's start with Greg Aaron.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Greg Aaron. I think a couple of meetings ago I had explained that one of our issues is that we can't force people to put the right data in the right places. A lot of issues that need to be solved do require the right person who's responsible for the domain to make that fix. For example, if there's a problem with the hosting, it's been broken into or something, the hosting provider needs to fix that, but a lot of times the hosting provider does not want to hear from necessarily an unknown third party. They want to check with or hear from the person who's responsible for the domain. And in a lot of cases, that person is the registrant. And in a lot of cases, tech contacts may or may not have the requisite authority to deal with issues. And this is true not only in the technical realm, but also in the legal realm. So we'll face the same issue when we talk about displaying contacts for various legal purposes. When Maxim says, well, you know, the hosting may be in various places or it may not be in the same spot that's listed, well, we can't solve that problem. We cannot force domain contacts to put in the exact right information and maintain it perfectly all the time. We need to be able to reach people who can solve the problems. And in a lot of cases, that's going to be a registrant, and I would prefer to be able to reach out to them and a technical contact. In a lot of cases, only the registrant may have the authority to fix things. Thanks.
Hey, Greg, I'm going to follow up. This is Chuck. So you probably have dealt with quite a few technical issues. Have you ever had to resort to contacting the registrant in any of those instances?
Many times.
Okay. That's good. I think that's helpful. And that's kind of what Greg Shatton was looking for in our previous discussion too. Greg Shatton, it's your turn. And I think I kind of misstated saying that the two Gregs took different positions, which isn't correct, as you can see. But Greg Shatton, your turn.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. Consistent with that clarification, my reasoning overlaps strongly with what Greg Aaron just stated. I would only add that technical contact, in my experience, can represent a variety of different technical vectors, and there's usually only one, I think there is only one technical contact. So I've seen the technical contact be an IT sysadmin person. I've seen the technical contact be the registrar. I've seen the technical contact, be perhaps a hosting provider, others. I've seen technical contacts, just you can't even tell who they are. It's not necessarily, the technical issue may not be the issue that that particular technical contact deals with. And on the and the ultimate responsibility does come back to the registrant to sort out whether and how and who would do something. So it's all very nice and well if the technical contact works for resolving the technical issue. But if it doesn't for whatever reason, you can't just be stuck there. Thanks.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, well, because these are tentative conclusions, we can still come back and revisit this if we want going forward. The poll results were pretty strong, but let's keep in mind this discussion as we move forward. It may be resolved by other events and other decisions we make, but rather than redoing the poll on this particular issue, my suggestion is that we go ahead and move forward and keep this in mind and even in our notes, observe what has been pointed out with regard by both Gregs in this regard.
Chuck, this is Greg Chatton again. If I could just briefly respond.
Sure, go ahead, Greg.
The poll did not ask us whether and versus or was the question. It presupposed an or for registrant contact, and only if the technical contact was empty. So we were not asked whether it was an and versus or. So that's why both Greg and I had to put our comments in the comment field, because there was no right choice. There was no choice that reflected this point of view. So there was kind of a forced choice. So I would not use this poll as any indicator that people thought or was right, because there was no ability for them to vote differently unless they either answered no to that box, which would have been silly, or they put something in the write-in candidate box, which usually doesn't get a lot of write-in. So I don't think we can come to any conclusion from this poll that or as between the technical and the registrant contact is even the result of the poll, much less correct. Thank you.
I think that's a valid point. So we will make sure we don't conclude more than what the poll asked. All right, let's go on then. Let's go down to Cal's comment, Cal Fair, there. Is Cal on? Oh, he is. Good. All right. I thought I saw him. Didn't I? Good. Cal, I'd like you, if you would, to explain your comment. We spent quite a bit of time talking about it, and we thought on the leadership team that we understood your point, but it'd probably be helpful for everyone if you explained it for us.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Cal Fayer for the record. It was a comment, I suppose, mostly on the language or terminology that we use for these agreements. And I don't think I was the only person last week to encourage the focus on roles rather than our current labels, the labels that we use to define contact today in who is as it stands. And my point was that a contact given within the context of a technical resolution or differentiated access, perhaps, or technical resolution is effectively always going to be a technical contact. And how you populate the details that you provide someone within that context, or within a for a query within that context, that we could decide later, and we might have a fallback mechanism where if someone doesn't provide a separate contact for each role, then they effectively inherit that with their, for the registrant contact. But presupposing those or aligning these agreements with the current labels might it might hamstring us in the future when we come to talk about roles. So it might just be useful to be quite strict with the way we refer to our options, so that we're describing roles, or if we choose to describe labels, then we make that very clear. But to me, the poll question was using the, I guess, the old labels that we know and love within WHOIS, rather than the role-based context that might be more preferable to use in the future.
So, Cal, this is Chuck. A quick question. Isn't, I mean, tech contact can be a role, can it not?
Yes, it can. But the way it was used in the poll, I didn't interpret that, especially given that we were talking about the registrant as well as the tech contact, which suggested to me that we weren't actually talking about a contact given within the context of a technical resolution.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And
so if we were to look into the future, perhaps,
okay,
and have a differentiated access for people who would only ever want technical resolution, I could argue that any contact given within that context is always a technical contact. Now, that might be, there might be more than one contact given, but they're only provided to a consumer as a technical contact. That's the role they're fulfilling in that moment. And maybe that's being overly pedantic and probably not worth discussing at this point. I didn't expect to speak too much about it.
And what would Mark Anderson asked a question in the chat there, and either Mark or Cal, you can respond. So what would be the role-based nomenclature instead of the way it was worded in the question? Go ahead, Mark, if you want to answer that.
Thanks, Mark. I'll jump in. Lisa's responded, party is serving in technical contact role. Party serving in technical contact role, I think, is kind of it's missing the point. It's the technical contact role. I think that, and, you know, this is something I've raised a number of times and expect I'll raise again. This is, you know, this is the EWG's role-based approach recommendation. So it's, you know, and Cal pointed out, you could actually, you know, people have said, you know, what if the technical contact isn't the right person or isn't accurate, or, you know, there's many different types of technical contacts depending on the issue, right? Having role-based contacts allows you to specify multiple contact points and assigning roles to those contact points. So I think, Cal's point is just, as we get down the road in this and start dealing with the nuts and bolts of putting together a future solution, I think the role-based nomenclature would serve us well. I agree with Cal's point. And, you know, to Lisa's question, it would just be tech contact role. That's what I'd use.
Okay. Thank you. Greg Shatton.
Hi, Chuck. It's Greg for the record, Greg Shatton. I guess the issue of tech contact role versus person kind of maybe begs the question of whether, you know, are we just talking about whether an email address identifies a human person, or are we talking about perhaps multiple technical roles, and we're not really talking about whether there's kind of personally identifiable information? You know, thinking about Volcker's reminder that we should never forget about the GDPR. Not sure I completely agree with that, but, you know, it is a fact of life. But so I guess maybe we need to distinguish whether we're talking about
roles-based, a collection of roles-based fields, or are we just talking about the issue of identify how you identify a person, whether you identify them by their role or by their kind of personal name? Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. All right. Is that an old hand, Mark?
New hand.
Okay.
Can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
I think the quick answer is it could be both. It could be you provide a call center, for example. You say, call this technical support hotline if you have a technical issue, or it could be you have an individual person that you're identifying for particular roles. So the short answer is either, both.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Going to Mike Hammer's comment, and unfortunately I don't think Mike's on the call. He's not showing up in Adobe anyway. Want to point out, he suggested that update the date and created date should be included as well for this particular purpose. I just want to point out that those two elements are part of the minimum public data set that we already agreed on. Now, is it worthwhile spending more time on this now? We thought maybe not, that it is in the minimum public data set. We've already reached a rough consensus agreement on that. So unless somebody wants to discuss that further, I was going to give Mike a chance to comment, but he's not on the call. So if there are no comments, all right. So we did want to spend some time on the comments, because they were all good comments and useful, and as several have pointed out, we should keep some of these things in mind as we move forward, including the comments on the role and focusing on that instead of maybe just a person, which some may still think of that as. So let's keep that in mind as we move forward. If there are no other comments on the comments, let's go ahead and move to the deliberation on domain name management, which is another one of the nine purposes that the drafting teams focused on. Okay, if you look at slide six, it goes over the building block approach that we're taking for each of these. And the first step is to agree whether the specific purpose should be considered legitimate for collecting some registration data and why. Okay, so that'll be the first thing we'll look at with regard to domain name management. For those that don't recall, by the way, this purpose was previously called domain name control. And after the work of the team and working group feedback, we changed that to domain name management. Okay, and so the first step really is to decide whether that purpose, domain name management, is legitimate for collecting some registration data before getting into the specifics. And then once we do that, going on and identifying data elements that are specifically required for that. And you can read the sub-bullets A and B there yourself. And keep in mind that we're going to defer discussion on collection conditions or access controls which might be applied to each data element. We'll have to get there eventually, but we're deferring that for now. Okay, let's then jump into domain name management. And what I'd like to do, if you'd look at slide seven and maybe slide eight is our eight and nine as well, but let's start with slide seven, and I want to turn it over to Susan to just give a quick review of this particular purpose. And before I do, Cal, do you have a question before we start into domain management?
Yes, I do, Chuck, and Cal Fire for the record. I just wanted to, and pardon my memory, perhaps we've already discussed this, but I wanted to ask about the use of the word legitimate for collecting, or in particular, for collecting some registration data. And the reason I ask that is that in I was in one of the groups that analyzed the use of domain of RDDS for proving domain name control for certificates, and we concluded that it was certainly useful but not strictly required. So I'm wondering how legitimate is used in this context, whether it means that this information is strictly required for this purpose, or that it can be used for this purpose, but if it's not available, it's also fine.
Good question, Cal, and I certainly welcome anybody to respond to that would like. So we will, and Lisa has her hand up, and Lisa, we will also, before we move on to Susan, record action on the recorded poll statement as a working group agreement. So let me take care of that right now. The one thing I forgot to do. So we're going to declare the statement that was polled as a rough consensus agreement, okay? And that doesn't mean that, like I said previously, that we can't come back and revisit that, and in particular, take advantage of some of the input that was received in the comments and on today's discussion. But let's go to Lisa in response to Cal's question.
Thanks, Chuck. Just making sure I'm off of mute. Cal, to answer your question, the approach that we're taking is sort of a two-pass approach, where first we agree that the purpose itself is legitimate for collecting some data, not being specific about what that data is. Should we agree that the purpose is legitimate for some data, then our second pass is to look at the data that's absolutely required for that purpose. I hope that answers your question.
And I think that, this is Chuck, I think that this, you know, legitimate is a decision we're making as a working group, in other words, and I think really we're going to make a distinction between, and we did in the last discussion, between required and useful. So I don't think, and anyone can correct me on this if I have this wrong, I don't think that we're going to suggest collection of any data that isn't specifically required for the purpose. In other words, we wouldn't collect something just because it's useful. But if I'm wrong on that, I welcome correction on that. So I don't know. Cal, with the responses there?
Thank you, Chuck. I think that's a good enough response for now. I'll just note that our conclusion was that the RDS data was useful but not required. But perhaps we can let that play out.
Yeah, and I think that your team is not the only team that may end up with that kind of a result. Okay, so that's a possibility that the working group will come to that kind of conclusion on other purposes. So that's okay, and we're going to have to make that distinction and deal with that. Greg Shatton, go ahead.
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton for the record. Hopefully, not dragging us any further into the weeds, but. Just a concern about the concept of being whether if something is sometimes required, I believe it should be considered required in the sense that there may be issues where you can get away without it,
There may be other times when you can't get away without it. But if we make it, if we raise the bar too high on requirements, you know, we know that carbon is required for life on Earth, I think, or oxygen, at least, is required for human life on Earth. You know, there's a 100% failure rate in not having oxygen. But there are many other things that are often required. Is clothing required? Is shelter really required? Food, yeah, I think that's required. I don't know how far down we want to get, you know, to the point where we're basically just sitting in our underwear or maybe sitting naked, you know, eating subsistence rations, and that's our definition of required. I just can see that there could be some mischief around it. So I would say that if something is never required, then it's not required. But if something sometimes is required in order to succeed, then it's required. Thanks.
No argument for me, Greg. This is Chuck. I think your logic is right on there. So if something is required sometimes, we're not going to put too high a standard on that. But again, let's just take what you said. I think unless somebody wants to disagree with that, I think it's correct. All right, Susan, go ahead and give us a quick review of domain name management purpose.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Susan Kawaguchi for the record. And the drafting team, too, reviewed this and thought about it. And so domain name management, the definition is information collected to create a new domain name registration and ensuring that the domain registration records are under the control of the authorized party and that no unauthorized changes, transfers are made in the record. So the task included create registrant ID, create domain name, add DNS data for domain name, monitor domain name registration records for changes and correlate with activities, manage set of domain names, keep them under the same administrative control, transfer a domain name registration from one registrar to another or from registrant to a new registrant, check registration database for status, existence of name when DNS does not work, check contact information for ICANN policy compliance. And the users, these would include the registrant, the gaining and losing registrar, registry, ISP, and other operational contacts, domain name operational contacts, potential other users are UDRP, URS, WIPO, ICANN, court proceedings, and enforcement actions, reseller and registrant affiliates, new or gaining registrant, anyone attempting to interact with the domain name for legal actions, ICANN staff, local law enforcement, GAC, public safety working group, and all of the data elements, pretty much any of the data elements in the WHOIS record. You know, one of my experience in domain name management, it was crucial, the WHOIS record, the public availability of that record to double check and verify when the accurate status of the domain name. Oftentimes when things would go wrong, that's where I would catch it first, and that's where it wasn't in my registrar account necessarily because somebody'd hacked in or done something unlawful. And so it didn't it oftentimes did not show up anywhere else in the beginning, you know, at the very start, except in the WHOIS record. So that was one of the use cases we were thinking about. But there's all obviously domain creation of a new domain name requires all of those data elements too. So Chuck, that's all I have.
So is and focusing on slide 7 through 10. Does anybody have any questions or any clarifications needed? Now, we discussed this purpose a few weeks ago with the drafting team, so I don't want to redo that. But if there's any clarifications, any questions, now would be a good time to ask them. Steve Mattel, it's your first.
Yes, thank you. This is Steve Mattel. One use that I thought would be included under domain name management, but I don't see it specifically listed, is a company that wants to get an authoritative list of what domain names it or its employees control. In other words, say they just want to identify what's in their portfolio. Does that come under task three here, or is that a separate task that ought to be listed? Or maybe that's covered by some other use case, and if so, I apologize for raising it now.
Susan, you want to respond to that, or anyone on the drafting team?
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine it being under three to manage a set of domain names. So that way you can verify what you own and that you still own it, which is sometimes a problem. And, so management is a very broad term, and managing a set of domain names is fairly broad, but I would think that is encompassed there.
And Susan, this is Chuck. Is it fair to say that the drafting team wasn't trying to be all inclusive in its lists of tasks and users and so forth? I would think that it's quite reasonable to expect that was not the intent, but to give enough examples for understanding. Is that right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Thanks, Steve, for asking that. Any other clarifying questions? Okay, then let's go down to slide 11. And the question is asked, is domain name management a legitimate purpose? And you can see on the slide the criteria that we've been using, and there may be other criteria that you want to apply, and I think that's okay if we as a working group agree to that. So what makes a purpose legitimate? And you can see we've gone over these before. Does it support ICANN's mission? Is it specific, et cetera? And in this particular case, does domain name management satisfy these criteria effectively? What do you think? Let's just open it up for discussion. How would you answer that question? Is it a legitimate purpose for collecting some data? Again, our next step will be to look at specific data elements like we did with technical issue resolution, but does anybody think that it's not a legitimate purpose for collecting some data in the RDS? Mark, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. The silence is killing me, so I'll jump in. So I'm looking at the set of questions and sort of glaring at my screen because, I feel like this is a legitimate purpose, but I'm having trouble explaining why I think it's legitimate. So I think maybe we need to spend a little bit of time drilling down into it to explaining why it's legitimate. My gut tells me it is legitimate, and I like the presentation that Susan gave, but looking at these questions, recalling the criteria, it's not obvious how it fits into some of these. Thanks.
So, Mark, just to put you on the spot, so do you think it supports ICANN's mission?
Not having the mission in front of me.
If you go down in the slides at the end, near the end or at the end is ICANN's mission. So feel free to do that since you have control there. But go ahead.
I'll just defer answering for now, I think.
Okay. Is it specific enough? If not, where should it be more specific? And we can go one by one. Any comments you have, are any of those not – which of those criteria, is it not clear that this particular purpose fits? Cal, go ahead.
I think my problem with this purpose, this is Cal Fayer for the record. My concern with this purpose and the fields or the data elements we've identified is that it seems to be perhaps a dual purpose, one to prove ownership and second to prove either management or some kind of control. And I think within different contexts, they individually are legitimate reasons to gather data and present it to people. But combined, I can think of a lot of reasons why data elements would not be reused in both contexts. For example, for domain name control, there's not much point in having the postal address unless that's how you were trying to prove that a person was managing a domain name via snail mail.
So, Cal, you're jumping ahead a little bit, okay? I think you've answered.
I'm sorry, perhaps I misunderstood. I thought at the start of this presentation we called this domain name management and control. Is that incorrect? Did I miss you?
Well, we're calling it domain name management, which includes control. Okay. Where you're jumping ahead is you're getting into specific data elements. We're gonna go there, and hopefully on this call if we have time. Okay. All we're asking, and I thought I heard you answer the question that. Domain name management, as defined here, including control, is a legitimate purpose for collecting some data. Now, once we agree on that, assuming we do, we will get down to the specific data elements such as postal address.
Right. Ed, sorry, I was just using that for illustrative purposes. My main concern was that we've combined management or control with ownership, and I do feel that they need to be discussed separately.
Okay. I don't know that that's a problem. When we go through, does anybody see that as a problem to look at? And so you're separating it into what, domain name registration and domain name control?
Yes, and I just see Andrew's comment there. I'm thinking more in terms of when we, and again, at risk of giving exact examples, when you're talking about a transfer of a domain name, it's very clear that only the person who owns the domain name should be authorizing that. When you're talking about control of a domain name, day-to-day control of the domain name is regularly delegated to possibly someone within your own organization and often to a separate organization that may carry out activities, legitimate activities, on your behalf. So there are clear scenarios where control and ownership, or if you want to use a different term for possessing or having the commercial ownership or management of a domain name versus the technical management of a domain name, we could come up with that, but it is still worth, in my mind, separating the two.
Okay. Thank you. Andrew, go ahead.
Hi, this is Andrew Sullivan. Thanks. So, I think that the distinction that we're talking about here is the reason we have different kinds of contacts. And so they're all different kinds of control. Each kind of control relevant to a domain name is instantiated in a different sort of contact. So, for instance, the delegation of day-to-day control over a domain is really the technical control over the operations at that domain name. But that doesn't you don't delegate to really anyone in the organization the legal control, the registration control over the name. On the contrary, that is a registration typically by a role or something like that, because you don't want the registration to be controlled by somebody who might leave or go to work for your competitor or whatever. So, and in fact, right, people get into trouble with that if they're not careful about the registrant of a domain name as opposed to, say, the technical contact or the administrative contact, contact or whatever. So I don't actually think these are different things, but they're different dimensions of, the, of control. And those different dimensions of control accordingly have different kinds of contact data associated with them. And that's the reason that you have to collect those different kinds of contacts. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. Anybody else want to respond to Cal's concern? Okay, so let me go back to the question at the top of slide 11. Is domain name management a legitimate purpose? And if you want to, if you want me to ask the question, domain name registration a legitimate purpose, and is domain name control a legitimate purpose, we can do that. Anybody, is there anybody on the call who thinks that either one of those is not a legitimate purpose for collecting some data? Okay. I'm not seeing anyone, so can we pose a and this is a possible poll question, okay, that we'll follow up this call with, that domain name management is a legitimate purpose. Now, how many of you think we ought to break that into two questions? Is domain name registration a legitimate purpose? And then separately, is domain name control a legitimate purpose? If you think that, would you put a green check in the Adobe, please? If you don't think that, you're welcome to put a red X. So there are a few people. Cal, obviously. Is anybody okay? Greg Shatton doesn't think it's necessary. A lot of people, I assume the lack of response probably means you don't care one way or the other. If I'm making a false conclusion there, let me know. So the question again is should we separate this question in a poll, in a follow-up poll to this meeting into two, instead of one question, is domain name management a legitimate purpose? Should we separate it into is domain name registration a legitimate purpose? And secondly, is domain name control a legitimate purpose? And I'm getting a mix of responses. Mark, go ahead.
I trying to interpret what Cal said. I'm not sure you're getting the question exactly right. And you know, I think Greg brought up the use case that, you know, you can have you know, when you have an ownership, you know, a company purchases a domain name, and somebody at that company may be responsible for managing that, and you don't want a situation where that person leaves and takes the company's domain names with them. And I think that's sort of the use case that Cal is sort of hitting at. And so I agree with, you know, Greg's point. You know, I think they're both aspects of the same question, or the same topic, but you know, I think Cal brings up a really good point that we want to make sure it doesn't get lost as we're looking at this purpose, because I think it's important to you know, to make sure there's the ability to separate out ownership and control.
Thank you, Mark. Susan, your turn.
Susan Calgucci for the record. So in my opinion, if you are managing a domain name, then and you, for the registrant, and you are, you know, in my experience obviously is for corporate registrations, is that then you make all of those choices. Who the registrant is going to be when you first register it, who would be the admin contact, and the technical contact. Now, for the most part, in my experience, you always use a role account, and it was very, you know, and we also had, you know, distinctive rules around what entities owned the domain name, so that was pretty clear. And then occasionally, due to, you know, working with a vendor or partnering with someone, then, you know, the domain management would make a decision on who the technical contact would be. For the most part, all three of those roles were the same contact information. But in cases, some cases, you know, a third party might actually have technical control over the domain name. And that is something that we've thought about, made a decision about, and allowed. So to me, domain management is a large umbrella, and it definitely covers domain name control. And the domain manager has all that decision-making power and to, you know, allow different contacts and to change those contacts if the relationship, you know, changes. So I don't see a need to separate this, but I'm not sure it would be harmful to separate it either.
Thanks, Susan. This is Chuck. And like Lisa points out in the chat, we would have to come up with two new definitions, which we're not going to take the time to do if we do that. It seems to me that it's very important to separate the two as we move into more detail and look at users and data elements. I don't see any particular advantage of separating them for this question. If somebody can help me see the advantage, I would appreciate that. For now, let's clear the X's and the check marks in the chat so we know what they're applying to going forward. And Cal, go ahead.
Chuck, I think David was first.
Well, I called on you. Go ahead. I saw your hand came up first on my screen, so go ahead, and then we'll go get to David.
Okay. Thank you. Cal Fayer for the record. Trying to address the concern of splitting the question, my concern is that later we will have we will be discussing the data elements associated with these purposes, and they will have we will have very different reasons for collecting those data elements, aggregating them into one umbrella purpose. I think will make it very hard to have a nuanced discussion about those data elements. So, to my mind, both purposes are actually legitimate. So that's the only thing we were going to ask people, then perhaps we can skip separating it out. But I think what happens next, and if that requires us to combine the discussion of data elements into one single conversation, I would be concerned.
And agree, Cal. This is Chuck. I'm fully on board with you. When we get beyond this question, we're going to have to look at both areas distinctly, and it may involve different users, it may involve different access, and so forth. So, totally agree with you. Let me go to David, and then we can go back to Lisa if she still wants to speak. David, go ahead.
Hi, David Cake speaking. So all I just really wanted to say is that I'm supportive of what it's a bit of what Cal is saying, and say I realize in the well, at least what Susan said about, you know, how these things work in a space is a very accurate description, but in the sort of small enterprise sector, for example, it is not at all uncommon to have people who definitely know that they can own their domain name and are very clear about it, but literally have no idea who is in effective control of it, and may, you know, it may be any one of three vendors that, or some more vendors that they got to do various things, or they're performing various technical services for them. But really, there is quite a distinct difference between control and ownership. And as Cal is saying, the different data elements and the way in which we use them, and whether or not they are required, does differ significantly between the sort of cases of ownership and control. And I agree that we should, you know, it's probably best to separate that discussion at a relatively early point so that it does not become confusing later on. Thanks.
Thanks, David. This is Chuck. Lisa, did you want to add any more?
Thanks, Chuck. The only point I wanted to make was that I think that's probably what's important is when we get to the data discussion that we know whether each item that is considered required is required for registration, for control, or for both. And then based on that, we might take a different decision about splitting out the purpose.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. If everybody look back at slide 7, the drafting team came up with a definition for domain name management so that we were consistent and clear. I suggest that we poll on the question, is domain name management a legitimate purpose? That's on the later slide, based on this definition. I am fully on board with everything many of you said, that when we dig down further on this, it will be critical that we distinguish. So I have no argument at all with that, but so that we don't have to take time out and come up with new definitions for two sub-purposes of this, I think we should ask the question using this definition, and hopefully, and what I've heard on this call, that there have been no objections, nobody saying, no, this domain name management as we've defined it is not a legitimate purpose. So I think there's agreement on this, with those on this call, that it is a legitimate purpose. Next week, I doubt if we're going to get much done tonight. Today, we might have a little time. We're going to have to dig down. And again, let me repeat once more. I agree that we're going to have to look at these different things because they will involve different users. They will involve different criteria, and if we go to gated access, different forms of access. So points well taken. If there are no strong objections, let's just do the poll question using the existing definition and the existing term domain name management. At least everyone on this call, I hope, understands the important points that have been made by Cal and others on the different uses. Now, David, is that a new hand? Okay, well, that then takes us to slide 12 on what data elements, or, and again, these could be some of these could be roles, some not. These are actually data elements here. are necessary for this purpose. And let's just talk about that. I've seen some talk in the chat. What do you think? I mean, in terms, I think I saw a chat earlier that all the data elements are needed for this purpose, and that's a possible conclusion that we could come to. But let's just open it up for some general discussion. We're not going to get through this part today because we only have a little over 15 minutes left. But we could at least get people thinking and sharing some initial thoughts about what data elements are necessary to collect, not to give access yet, and not who gets access, but to collect for this purpose. Who would like to start that discussion? Mark.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Mark Anderson for the record. And I note that this this list on page 13 shows, you know, all the current WHOIS records except or output except registrar abuse contact email phone and the URL of the ICANN WHOIS inaccuracy complaint form. So it's basically all the forms in the existing WHOIS. And I don't think I don't know to the extent that this discussion group really looked beyond the existing fields. So maybe that's my first question is, you know, did you consider, fields outside of the WHOIS that we know today? Is there any consideration to what would be, starting with a blank slate, what would be the fields that you would want to have in order to fulfill this purpose? So I guess I'm asking a question back to the review team that looked at this. Did you just consider existing fields, or was there any consideration for sort of a blank slate approach to what fields would be ideal for meeting this purpose?
Thanks, Mark. Susan, or someone else from the working group, would you like to respond?
Sure. This is Susan Calgucci for the record, but Maxim is also on the call, and he might, or others that were on the team. I think we did. We went through the data elements and decided that, especially in some circumstances, that there was a reason for all of the existing data elements, but didn't come up with anything else except maybe splitting out, with purpose-based contacts, some of those responsibilities that are encompassed by the current roles. So like legal contact or I'm sort of blanking on anything else right now. But so we did consider that, but I'm not sure we gave it a tremendous amount of thought.
And this is Chuck. Let's keep in mind, like has been said in previous calls, we're not restricted to what exists today. It makes a convenient starting point, but if that distracts people, we can use a different approach. Don't feel restricted by what you see on slides 12 and 13. Let me go back to the chat a second. Was there a question I missed in the chat that we should deal with? Mark, did you have a question in the chat that didn't get answered, or is that what you just brought up? Go ahead, Mark.
Thanks, Chuck. Mark, again, I don't really want to hold us up unnecessarily, but back on question on slide 11. Is domain name management a legitimate purpose? And the criteria what makes a purpose legitimate? I want to reiterate. I I don't feel that domain name management is not a legitimate purpose. I feel that it is a legitimate purpose. But if somebody asks me the question, why is domain name management a legitimate purpose, I don't feel real comfortable with my ability to answer that question. And I guess what I'm hoping we could get to as a group is to provide a better, or provide me a definition that I could use if somebody puts me on the spot, to sort of help justify why we're saying domain name management is a legitimate purpose. So again, I'm not, I'm not arguing against it by any means. I just feel like we've sort of, just all agree that it's legitimate and haven't really defined why we think it's legitimate.
Okay, Mark. Andrew, go ahead.
Hi, this is Andrew Sullivan. So I'll take a stab at that. This is the access method to the registration database. And the registration database literally only exists for domain name management. That's its whole point. Without this question of who has the registration and how and where are they running the technical services at that, you wouldn't have any need for a registry. So if this isn't a legitimate purpose, then it's not clear to me that there is any legitimacy to having a registration database at all. I think it reduces to that simple matter of the fact that you have this registration database precisely because you've got a distributed operation, and the distributed operation requires a place in which people can register the nature of their control over the subordinate domain name space. That's what it's for. So that's the reason this is a legitimate operation. If you don't have this kind of management, you don't get a large distributed database of the sort that the domain name system is. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. Greg, you're next.
Hi. This is Greg Aaron. Seconding what Andrew said, this is also explained pretty well in the EWG report. Now, Lisa Pfeiffer just posted a definition in the chat room. There's a huge hole in it. What it says is creating a domain and then ensuring that no unauthorized parties change it. But what's missing here is the ability of the authorized party to maintain and manage the domain name, which includes making changes to it, keeping the contacts correct, changing name servers, and so forth. So this definition is lacking something really important right now.
Which definition are you referring to? Is it on one of the slides?
Lisa posted it in chat.
Okay, well, let me scroll down. I see I'm up too far in the chat. Information collected to create a new domain name registration, ensuring that the domain registration records under the control of the authorized party and that no authorized changes, transfers are made in the record. That's the definition you're referring to, Greg?
Yes, and it's that no unauthorized changes, transfers made to the record. So again, what's missing here is the ability of the registrant to manage its domain name, to make any changes to it once it's been registered.
Oh, I see. Okay, good. Is everybody following? I wasn't, as you could tell. So so that's interesting. Discussion on that. Any disagreement with Greg on that? Cal?
I think this comes to the heart of why I'm struggling with this particular very broad purpose, because the definition contained there describes what I think we refer to as lead control of the domain name, where you can prove that you are the owner of the domain name and manage it in a way, sort of transfer it, for example. And those are, and I think there's very clear reasons for certain data elements for that. But there's other reasons like lifecycle reasons. You might be emailed by someone, by the registrar, typically regarding your the expiry of your domain name. And today that still goes to the registrant's email address, although it could go to a privately registered communications channel as well. But then separately, we've got data elements here that include things like domain statuses and name servers. And they really have no connection at all to the legal control of a domain name, which is why I think having this very broad purpose is going to make discussing these elements very challenging, because where each individual nuanced purpose is going to inherit quite a lot of unnecessary data elements.
So Cal, thanks. I'm going to please take a look at the last alternative that Lisa put in the chat to see if that helps solve the problem. And again, let me say, there's no reason why we can't take these pieces apart when we get down to more specific deliberation. So, and in fact, we'll probably have to, as you have pointed out several times. But my question to you is, looking at that the last alternative that Lisa put in the chat, does that help? And does that deal with, and Greg, Aaron, I'd like you to comment as well as to whether changing that definition as suggested there helps deal with the concerns that are being expressed. So I don't know who wants to respond first. Greg, let's start with you since you first raised it, at least in this specific sense. Greg, Aaron?
It's working a lot. Hi, it's Greg, Aaron. It's working a lot better. I could probably find even better language in the EWG report, but this is a start.
Okay, thank you. And Cal?
So long as that is a deliberate choice to exclude technical control or technical management, because everything that's described in there is more legal or commercial management. So if that is a deliberate choice, then I agree with it.
Okay. Alex? I see the hand went down. You're still welcome to jump in, Alex, if you'd like. Okay. Not hearing you. I guess you're okay. Okay, Greg, Aaron, help us fix it. Now, one of the things we try to avoid is doing a lot of work.
Chuck, I'm not going to try to do that here at the end of the call, but yeah, I'm not going to try to do that here at the end of the call. Like I said, we should probably go back and look at the EWG report. There's probably been some good work done on this.
So one of the problems we deal with in making progress in this working group is we can end up like we are right now on just about everything we do, which means it takes 3 or 4 weeks just to make a little bit of progress. And that means this working group will last 10 to 15 years. How do we manage this in such a way that we can deal with the critical issues, and I'm not minimizing the points that are being made, without dragging it out for 10 to 15 years? My suggestion would be that we use the alternative definition, since that's all we have right now, and do a poll to find out whether indeed people believe this is a legitimate purpose so that we can move on, understanding that we will fix the definition going forward. If we have to delay doing a poll and assessing agreement not only of those with on the call, but also those not on the call, we're just pushing this thing out forever, and we will, most of us will be out of the ICANN environment before we ever reach any useful conclusions. And again, I'm not minimizing the points being made, but somehow we have to be able to keep moving and fix things on the fly without having to have everything perfect before we can make any decisions. As long as we're perfectionists in everything that we do, with a group this size and this controversial, it will be impossible to move forward at a reasonable pace. So my suggestion is that we do a poll on this based on the alternative definition with the stated understanding that we will fix the definition as needed, but we won't stop and defer the poll because that just pushes things out. And if we do that on everything, I've made clear what that means. Greg Aaron, go ahead.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Greg. Yes, you've phrased two different problems. One is, do we think this is a legitimate purpose? By all means, let's dispose of that question. It seems like an easy one, I think, to answer. As far as wordsmithing, not enough wordsmithing is taking place between meetings. And what you see is people having to bring up oftentimes very legitimate, important points during the calls. This group is not putting stuff down on paper between meetings and taking care of that in the interstices. So my suggestion is to work in some different way, because sometimes this language is actually really important. And we will have to get it done in some way or another at some point in time. And this is not the reason why this group is going to go on for 10 years, by the way. This group has other problems.
Well, this would cause it to go on for 10 to 15 years, so I'll disagree with you on that, in addition to the other reasons. So, okay. Lisa, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. I'm Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. I just wanted to, in response to Greg's observation, the drafting teams are actually our attempt at trying to promote more work on actual production of text in between our calls. And in this case, Drafting Team 2 did actually start with a template that contains the EWG report definition. And they moved on from that definition and put forward the one that we see here. So we've had this call, but also a couple of calls where we reviewed the Drafting Team 2's definition to try to put forth some suggested additions or ask some clarifying questions. I think what Chuck is saying is, we need to continue moving forward with the text that's put in front of us. And if we have concerns about that text that comes from a drafting team, we need to raise that early on. Thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Mark?
Thanks, Chuck. I agree strongly with what Greg said. There's some of the wordsmithing is critically important. The problem is we're not doing any of that between meetings. The chat between meetings seems to be monopolized by ideology discussions and not the work, of the working group. And we need to find a way as a working group to figure out how to, contribute and do some of this wordsmithing between meetings and focus on the larger issues during the meetings.
Thanks, Mark. Lisa, is that a new hand?
Apologies, old.
Okay. So the leadership team will take these points, and they're good points. I don't want to minimize anything that anybody made. But I am, as you can tell, very concerned that we figure out ways to deal with these issues without dragging every little issue out for several weeks. So the leadership team will take all this into consideration. We will do a poll on is domain name management a legitimate purpose, and we'll try and figure out a way to couch that doesn't step on anybody's toes, and realizing that we will have to refine some details as we move forward. That said, we are over time. We did make a little bit of progress. We have lots more to make. Please watch for the poll and respond to it. And it's important people on the call as well as those not on the call respond to the poll so that we can document the progress that we do make. I don't think there's, again, the leadership team will take a look. Should we include the EWD definition, the drafting team definition? We'll try and do that in such a way that as good as possible without having to come back and revisit it with the whole group before doing the poll. So that said, is there anything else we need to cover? Our meeting next week is at the same time, next Tuesday, our regular time. And note that Julie put that in the chat. We will continue our discussion of domain name management next week, including hopefully getting into data elements in particular. And hopefully even by then we will have a little bit of progress in the definition itself. Anything else we need to cover? Lisa, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. I just wanted some clarity about which version of the statement we're going to pull on this week. Is it the one as produced by Drafting Team 2? Is it the alternative that includes enabling management of the domain name registration, or both?
It's a good question. I think that let's work that offline as a leadership team and rather than me trying to make a command decision right here, because I probably would mess it up. So let's discuss on the leadership list. I guess my leaning is to include maybe multiple definitions, but get an answer to the question. Whichever definition you pick, which is domain management a legitimate purpose? I keep hearing people say yes. And I keep hearing people say that we're going to need to break that down further when we proceed, and I agree with that. But I would like to confirm that domain name management, however we end up defining it, is a legitimate purpose. So, Lisa, let's work on that on the leadership list immediately after this call and try and come up with something. It probably won't be perfect, everyone, okay? So please don't look for perfection. We're not that good. So let's go ahead and adjourn the meeting a few minutes late. And thanks, everyone. Let's keep plugging away. Meeting adjourned.